This is CliffCentral.com.
All right, a couple of things we wanted to let you know about today. And Leanne has got a whole long list. I've got a great story. I just have to share this. I think it's a great story just because it's hilarious, even though it's sort of disappointing about the nature of humanity.
Oh, no.
So my mother is on this neighborhood watch group. Everybody's on these WhatsApp groups, right? You know, the whole neighborhood. It's not just the people who live in her particular area. It's the whole area. It's the whole suburb. And there's the local politician on there. There are a whole lot of the residents, the local police thing. So they all put on information about what's happening. There's a suspicious car on the corner of this street and that street.
Must be a really busy group.
Oh, yeah.
Pinging all the time.
I could never be on a group like that. It would drive me crazy. So I stay off of these things. I don't partake in WhatsApp groups like that. I kind of, if I'm on even friends groups sometimes, don't tell them, but I mute them.
Yes.
You know, for like 8 hours or a week, or you can mute them for a whole year, and they don't know. So you don't have to get involved in those conversations all the time. And sometimes when you're busy, you have to. Anyway, she's on this group, my mother. And people post stuff the whole time. On Monday, some woman posts, "This is a strange problem we've got. I wonder if anyone can help."
Oh, no.
Someone in the neighborhood, or a vagrant, or whatever, is coming into this woman's garden and shitting in her garden every night with using toilet paper in it. But every night, for a couple of nights in a row, someone has come into someone has come into this woman's garden, and now she's posted on the group. She says, "They're definitely human turds. Because there is toilet paper with them. Can anybody help?" So some other woman comes
up,
goes, "The same thing's been happening to me."
Oh, no.
And they both start this discussion around these people who are evident, or one person who's just shitting in someone's garden. Now, I thought about this.
Sure, there is quite a bit to think about. Sure.
There's a lot to think about, right? Some other person then posts, "It could be those people who live in the blue car."
Oh, no.
There are people who live in a car?
Exactly. So there's all this stuff going on in my parents' neighborhood that I don't even know about, that they don't even know about.
I would say that's suspect number one.
People who live in the blue car?
Yes.
I don't know how far this woman lives from the blue car.
Well, the blue car can get around.
Probably pulls up outside their house at like midnight and someone goes and squats and takes a shit in their garden. How do you like that, though?
Oh, my word. Unless it's, I thought, might be a really clever dog who's learned to use toilet paper.
No.
Yeah, so she's obviously got one of those gardens which is open to the street, right? And then these people come in, or this person comes in and drops a coil at like 3 in the morning.
A steaming pet.
And then
why didn't they do it in like a park or something?
Or why don't they find a shopping center and there's got to be a toilet in there?
And garages.
Know? Yeah.
Or can't you like, I don't know, cover it up like a dog once you're done?
You would think.
Maybe.
But clearly they're shameless. They needed to go and that was what they did. I just thought it was hilarious because if you're going to be on these groups, there's got to be entertainment every now and then. This is entertainment.
This reminds me of it was last month when Amazon had to release a statement after one of their drivers was recorded taking a crap in someone's yard. So that is so guttural.
But also, there's this woman who's just been. She's handed herself over.
This person just goes to some some woman's garden and just pulls down their trousers.
When
and
you
just
gotta go, you gotta go.
And it's the most natural position to be in. That is the position to be in. Yeah. So a woman in the US has turned herself in after she urinated on potatoes at Walmart.
Doesn't everybody
what
do that?
What the heck?
I know. She was spotted by a Walmart employee who just kind of let her finish her business.
Explain.
Why? Yeah.
Just explain.
So, yeah, she was hovering over the potatoes, having a wee.
Hovering. You use the term hovering?
Yeah.
Hmm.
And a Walmart employee saw her, but they don't say whether he tried to intervene or not. But he identified her on CCTV footage.
Did she bother to explain herself, or do we
She's
not know?
She's only just turned herself in. Police have been looking for her. They've been carrying out this search to try and figure out who she is, identity searches and things. But she has now handed herself over. But it was the Pennsylvania Walmart, if anyone's interested.
Right.
And not they to did, shop there,
yeah,
then.
They did,
urinating on the potatoes.
They did take the potatoes, they threw them out, and they have sanitized the area.
See, what is up with people? I mean, what's going on in people's lives that they're pooing and weeing in places like this? I would love to understand. It's just too much, right?
See, there's no...
You would get stage fright.
There's no excuse for something like that.
No.
Because if you really had to go and you were bursting, you could have gone anywhere else, like on the floor maybe.
Yes.
You can ask to mop it up, but on top of something that will get sold.
Yeah, she's obviously sick.
That is sick and twisted.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you want some admission here?
Oh, no.
Oh, have you done this?
No judgment.
Beyond the asparagus.
No.
Okay. Go on, Sia. Tell us that. No, it's your time to.
Because when you really gotta go, you really gotta go.
What happened, Sia?
It's not so mortifying, but I once was off to a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And I had driven into this building parking lot. And I thought, oh my goodness, I'm not going to make it to the loo. And I really needed to pee. And more than that, it's a building I don't know. So you understand that you have to get into the lift and go to reception. And then you have to sign in. And now signing in is like you practically have to give a blood sample and your ID and a fingerprint. And then you have to ask for the loo.
You're making this sound more dramatic than it is. Most people can contain themselves. Clearly you couldn't.
No. I was really bursting. So I thought, I have a bottle of water in the car and I'm in this parking lot. So I know what to do. I just like rolled down the window. I poured out the water.
Oh, no.
And I peed into this bottle.
Oh, my
but you
word.
Did, okay, you, good for you. You didn't pee against
in the parking
wall
lot.
In the
yeah.
subterranean parking lot, because those places stink already from people who do that.
What I didn't do, though, is once I didn't roll up the window, once I'd rolled it down, and there were two security guards who were walking up and down.
And they saw everything?
Oh, would they have definitely seen?
Yeah, the one was on one of those scooter thingies, just going up and down. And I thought, you know, there's no way to deny this. And I'm not even going to make it a moment.
Did they point at you and laugh
no,
and talk to each
no.
other about you?
It was just a moment of, let's not acknowledge what just happened.
I've taken what they call a boss cuck with my ballet once, actually.
Yes.
What a bonding experience.
What happened? Tell us
the
story.
We went on a cycling thing where all three of us were supposed to do this mountain bike race. I think it was in KZN.
Mm-hmm.
But only Damon ended up doing it. So my ballet and I just went along for the ride. And we were in the bush somewhere and there were no toilets and I needed to go.
Mm-hmm.
And she had to look the other way and I had to go in the under the tree. Mm-hmm. Here's the worst part, though.
Oh, because this isn't bad already.
We then got into
a 4x4
and drove on a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And we were standing with the organizers of the race. And one of the organizers' dogs came running over to us. And he had the toilet paper in his mouth.
Oh, man. You're kidding, right? Oy, oy, oy.
And my belly and I knew exactly where it had come from.
Oh, my God.
And we were going, oh, look at that dog.
That's when you have to use hood rule number 8, deny till you die. You don't know where it came
hectic.
From. You didn't see anything.
That's horrible.
So awkward. Oh. So awkward.
That's not so great.
No, it is not. Well, speaking of lavatorial things.
Yes, we love lavatorial things. We often talk about them here, yes.
If you've got the opposite problem, so if you're a bit plugged up.
Yes.
There are certain foods that'll make you poop almost immediately.
Leanne.
Well, this is great. All right, let's go. Let's help people.
So,
see, this is community service. This is where we do things for others.
Number one is water. Okay, because that can really back you up if you're dehydrated.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you'd need water to go.
Mm-hmm.
The other is caffeine.
Sure.
You know, when you kind of have your 9 a.m. coffee and then you end up going to the loo quite soon afterwards, it's because it's a stimulant. High fiber fruit, so apples, raspberries, peaches, guava, papaya, and of course prunes.
Prunes, we know about prunes.
Yes.
Sure.
Prunes
will open you up like the Hoover Dam.
Yes. Mm. Raw green vegetables because of all the fiber.
Uh-huh.
Oatmeal.
Uh-huh. Always good.
Healthy fats like avo, olive oil, etc. And curry. Curry is a natural laxative.
Well.
And that's because the compound capsaicin found in hot chili peppers stimulates a receptor in the body that speeds up digestion.
Yeah, curry's the one thing I'm just not going to let go of there.
Well, curry, yeah, you know, what else? What do you use? I like dried apricots. I always keep a supply of those in the house.
You said it once, Gareth, if you just have like a liter of liquifruit, you're sorted.
Well, not liquifruit, but pure apple juice. That's you just basically poo water. I mean, it's...
Fishholes.
Through the eye of a needle.
Yeah. Fish.
A new Cliff Central show, just for shits and pissing around.
Oh, my
someone.
Gosh.
Yes, this is the kind of feedback we're getting this morning from Craig. And here's one. Speaking of the loo, at what point in a relationship is it okay to go number two in your girl or guy's place?
Oh, see.
That question comes from Simba.
I mean,
no, I think I would say you never ever do it because it spoils the relationship and you will never be able to get it back.
Yeah.
So what, make an excuse and go to a garage or go home?
Well,
I think there are tactical ways to get around it.
Yeah, you've got to go when they're not around, or you've got to use maybe if you have two bathrooms, you know. Something you've got to do there. You don't need to share everything.
So I use two go-to moves. The first is when I go and shower or bath, and I know, okay, at least I have, you know, a space of 10 minutes and I'll be uninterrupted here. Or this is really smart if I do say so myself, when you leave the house and you're in the car ready to pull out and drive off and you go, forgot something inside. That gives you a shorter space of time, though. That gives you, you know, 2 minutes max before it becomes suspicious.
Okay,
but do that, you see?
Sure.
And then you're also guaranteed you're leaving the house, so, you know, there won't be any fumes lingering.
What if they'll come with you?
Fumes.
No, that's a relationship you don't want. Tell them to stay in the car.
Fumes.
You know those fumes linger.
All right, this is very lavatorial.
It is so revolting.
Oh.
It is. This is really interesting, okay? Japan has approved scientists' plans to create the world's first humanimals.
Uh-oh. You mean like the island of Dr. Moreau, where they make those creatures? Oh, no.
Okay,
please.
So it's not like that.
It's a very bad idea. Ladies and gentlemen, we need to stop this in its tracks.
No, it's a very good thing.
Go on.
So it's going to enable scientists and researchers to grow human organs in other animals.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, pigs with human pancreases.
Oh, yeah, poor pig.
So when the pig is slaughtered for food, they harvest the pancreas and it's given to a person who needs a pancreas or a liver or whatever.
You're okay with that as an animal rights activist?
No, I'm not. There are obviously many things that are wrong with it, but it looks like it's going ahead.
Okay.
So, for instance, you would. So, what they first do is they have the pig grow up, but it's been genetically engineered to not have a pancreas. Okay, so it's born without a pancreas, and they implant a human pancreas.
All right.
It's huge ethical questions. For example, what happens if human cells get into a test animal's brain.
Yeah.
That's things that they've been worried about.
I remember they were
is it right to harvest human organs from a pig?
They were growing ears on mice, human ears on mice, and then they would transplant the ear. The outside of the ear, obviously. So the actual thing that you see on someone's head. Hey, good morning. What's up?
Hey, what's up, guys? How's it going?
Cool. Who's this?
Yeah, this is Simba.
Hey, Simba. What's up, my man?
not much. Hopefully it's not too loud. I was sending text messages because I'm at an airport right now, so hopefully it's not too loud in the background.
No, it's cool. Go ahead.
Good. So the reason I'm calling is you guys are just, you know, my stream's a little behind, but you guys are talking about the lavatorial situation, and I had to tell you the story. It's really embarrassing, but I just feel like I have to tell you guys the story.
Go on.
So it's like 4 or 5 years ago, and the reason I asked about like when's it appropriate to go number two at a new, you know, fling's house or whatever. 3 or 4 years ago, I was dating this girl. We go out, third date. We went out for sushi. I don't eat sushi that much, and you know, it went well. Great date. Like third or fourth date, go back to her place. You know, we're chilling at her house. We get into the bedroom. Things are starting to get, you know, a little hot and heavy. You know, doing what grown-ups do. And my stomach decides, no, this is not happening right now. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it is just rumbling. And I'm like, I'm completely mortified.
Oh, man.
So completely mortified. I tell her, hey, real quick, I need to go to the bathroom. I'll be back. I'm thinking, okay, I could just, you know, get in there real quick, get it out, be done, right?
Mm-hmm.
I get into the bathroom.
Yes.
I do my thing really quick, done and done, and I flood her fucking toilet.
Oh, no.
Oh.
Oh, that's the worst.
Now you can't hide that.
That feeling when the water starts rising.
I remember like it was yesterday. I'm washing my hands at the sink. I look to my left, and I just see slowly water pouring out of the toilet.
Oh, man.
No.
And I mean, I hate to be super descriptive in the morning, but this is doo-doo water. I mean, I'm like, oh, my God.
There are remnants.
Third date.
Yeah.
So what did you do?
So there's nothing you can do. I grab a towel, and I'm starting to see if I can mop it up. And at some point, I'm just like, okay, this is ridiculous. I go back to the girl, and I'm like, you are not going to believe this. This is the most embarrassing thing ever. I just flooded your toilet. And she actually took it like a champ. She was really, really cool about it. We kind of laughed it off. We went to like to the nearest, little CVS store, a little drug store, got a plunge. I cleaned it up, took a shower.
But how did the date go after this? I mean, you must have been laughing, but it's still awkward.
You know, we kind of laughed the awkwardness off, and it worked out. I mean, look, I woke up next to her the next morning, and it was fine.
Okay, so then that clearly didn't go as badly as you thought.
Yeah, and we dated for like another, you know, month or two, and it was okay. Huh. It was pretty cool, but you know, I think it was a good way to break the ice because she took it the right way.
Would you suggest for people who are unsure of how to deal with this that what you got to do is be as honest as possible and just say, hey, listen, I'm really sorry, but this has happened.
Yeah, you don't want to ignore it.
Look, I would even go further. I would say assert dominance and poop on the first date.
Okay. Make sure she knows. All right. Cool.
Yeah, but no. Honestly,
how are you doing though, Simba? You good?
Honestly, okay. Yeah, doing good. Just been doing a lot of traveling. It's good to listen live. It's been a while since I listened live. I've just been podcasting for a while, but good to finally catch you guys live for a while.
What's the time over there right now?
I'm actually in Hawaii, so it is, what is the time? Yeah, 7:20. So I think we're 12 hours off.
Yeah, exactly 12 hours. All right. You're at 7:20, you're at 7:20 in the evening.
Yeah. So just getting ready to head back home.
Cool, man. Well, have a good flight and we'll check in with you later.
All right.
Cool.
Cheers, guys.
There we go.
Bye,
Simba.
See ya.
Wow, all right. Sia's just waving. Okay, a couple of other things we need to get to.
Yes.
Apparently, Japan's plan that Leanne was talking about just a second ago to make these animals means that we'll be able to harvest these organs from the animals. We won't have to grow them in laboratories, although I prefer that idea. If we can grow them in an animal, can't we just grow them in a petri dish?
I think when you grow them when in a microwave. You need an organ like a pancreas or a liver or something like that, you actually aren't really perturbed about where it's come from.
That's good. Did your organs just fall out, Sia?
Sia had he left and had some prunes.
Yes. I was trying some of those tips. Yes.
All right. Enough of the lavatorial stuff.
Yes.
I do want to know though. Something that bothers me is the toothbrush.
Because
you put that toothbrush in your mouth when it's filthy, right? And then you brush your teeth. And then for many people, they just put it straight back into some dish next to the basin.
Mm-hmm.
That's not enough.
No,
how do you
not.
Sanitize that?
So the best thing, you know, often people think they'll put a cover on it. So you mm-hmm. get these little toothbrush covers.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But those are even worse because they just stay moist and they... harbor.
Oh, I've never thought bacteria. Of it like that.
Yeah. Right. The other thing is there's, and I know this with my own toothbrush, I have an electric toothbrush. You know, you leave it upright and sometimes you get some toothpaste caking up on the handle. Oh. All those sorts of things. So I've done this before where I'll put my toothbrush under hot running water and think that that's cool. I have heard of people putting them in dishwashers. Right. Which I think it's gross.
No, I've heard of tricks of putting it in hot water, like boiling hot water mixed with salt or something.
So all those things ruin the bristles. They actually eat away at the bristles.
Oh.
Apparently the best thing to do is for 15 minutes, soak your toothbrush head in antiseptic mouthwash.
15 minutes?
Yes, no longer.
Okay.
Because overexposure to the mouthwash can also damage the bristles. The other thing to do is to keep a set of hand towels or like face cloths next to your toothbrush and actually wipe off your toothbrush when you're finished with it.
So is it the moisture that's bad?
Yeah, it's mainly the moisture.
Okay.
And like in the bottom of the cup as well, if you put your toothbrush, mm-hmm. yes.
Mm-hmm.
That thing
so rather just wipe it off. Make sure it's dry. It's mm-hmm. the moisture that's the issue here.
All right.
So I know all of these people mean well when they do and create studies like this, but will this kill us? And that's another thing.
I mean, your mouth bacteria isn't going to kill you. It lives in you. And provided you're not picking up other diseases and other things are infesting your toothbrush, no, you won't die, but it just makes your life a little bit cleaner. And I think that's to be approved of by most human beings. I don't like the idea of stuff festering.
I just don't like the idea of mold. For me, it's the mold issue.
Mildew.
Look, it's not comforting.
And you know, I was told at Sunday school when I was growing up that the Bible sees mildew as a sin if you have mildew in your house.
Wow, that's where they started getting you.
Yeah.
What Sunday school did you go to?
And for a long time, I couldn't even look at mushrooms because the fungus. I was like, that's evil.
Well, I only raise the point of will it kill you because I know for the longest time, I went through this paranoia of when you flush your loo, supposedly there's so many germs that
you've got to keep the lid down
that jump out, and there's a trajectory that goes on and it can land everywhere. I don't want to overthink like that. You know, some of these things are just out of your control. I remember got to a point where I used to sometimes calculate if I was in a different home. You know, sometimes it was a tiny apartment and, you know, the bathroom would open up to the kitchen or the main living room area, and I would think, oh, are there germs in here now? I don't want to think about that. If it's not going to kill me, then okay, let me just move past.
You can't be paranoid. But I do want to reflect on one thing that I saw this week. Fortnite, they had the World Fortnite Champions, and it was
did
watched
you know that was a thing?
Yeah, it was it watched in a stadium, and it was watched by millions of people.
So these are people watching people play Fortnite.
Correct. And the World Fortnite Champion, do you know how much he won?
$3 million.
Now that is more than the Wimbledon champion gets.
Jeez, this is true.
That is more than the Indy 500 champion gets. It's more than the Masters, which Ben always used to talk about nonstop. That's more than you get at the World Darts Champions. It's more than you get for winning the Tour de France. It's more than
more
you get,
than you get for winning the Tour de France.
More than you get from the Ironman World Championship, the Pipeline Masters, or the New York Marathon. So don't for a minute believe that your kid playing games isn't a good investment in your future.
Yeah, but then how many?
When we talk
what
about
are the chances?
When we talk about Serena and Venus and that father of theirs who made them work.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, he made them practice every day. You're going to be great tennis stars, so I can make some money out of you. And he did. He turned them into superstars. There was just discipline, discipline, discipline. Andre Agassi's dad did the same thing with him, right? Mm. Tiger Woods' dad did the same thing with him.
Michael Jackson's dad.
Well, if you win, you win the Masters, you only get $2,070,000. But if you won Fortnite, you win $3 million. And the kid who won was like 14.
He's 16 years 16. Old.
16.
Would you be slightly bitter? No, I don't think you'd be slightly bitter if you were an athlete because, you know, the industry is bigger, so you still make more in endorsements and...
Listen.
You'll still be booked to speak elsewhere.
I think this kid's gonna be all right. $3 million for playing a game.
Yeah. The runner-up who won $2.25 million, yes. I think he's 15 years old. His name is Jaden Ashman. Spends about 8 hours every single day playing Fortnite since it was released back in 2017.
So when is he studying?
Yeah, he doesn't have to. This is the point. He does not have to. Everybody reckons you're going to get a university, you're going to get a degree. Mm. Like, I would rather have this kid with his 3 million rand prize money playing Fortnite the whole time. That's his job. He's made money out of it. More than... Have you made $3 million out of your job with your university degree? No, you have not.
And probably more than his parents. So now his parents will have to just sit down and listen to him.
Oh, no, they'll be glomming off of him. Don't you worry.
The World Cup of Fortnite is way bigger than I thought it was. Because firstly, part of my ignorance, I hadn't even heard of it. But more than 40 million players participated in the qualifying events for the final. And the final took place over this weekend in New York City on Saturday and Sunday. There were 50 duos and 100 solo players that made it through to the finals. And they were all...
I thought you said duos.
Duos.
Duos. See, now I'm so cognizant of my Durban accent peeping out then sometimes. Duos. And they were all competing to get a cut of the $30 million prize pool, which is the largest prize pool in the history of all of esports, mind you.
That's fantastic. Good for this kid.
Sure.
But doesn't that just make you think the jobs of the future? Because this is a job. He's made more money than some people who will work in their lifetimes doing a craft or a skill, practicing some kind of university-educated degree in a profession.
Mm.
I mean, become a doctor. This guy's won $3 million, boom, like that. He's probably been playing Fortnite for years, but that investment has turned out to be very valuable.
Mm.
So let's stop thinking about this as, oh, you have to do the same thing that generations of humans have done for years before. It's not the way it is.
Mm.
Good for this kid. Love it.
Love a good old gangster story, like a 1930s American notorious gangster, right?
Sure.
The body of one of these guys is going to be exhumed purely, and this is 85 years after he was killed by FBI agents.
Who's this?
His name is John Dillinger.
Dillinger. John Dillinger, yeah. They're gonna dig him up?
Yeah. And apparently it's all putting to rest conspiracy theories suggesting that some people considered him a folk hero and that he isn't even buried in his marked grave.
Wow.
Yeah. So they're going to... But this exhumation is quite a thing because... His father actually buried him under a slab of concrete.
They've made a movie of this guy, though. He was an American gangster, right? He had a group of men known as the Dillinger Gang, and they were accused of robbing 24 banks and 4 police stations and all kinds of other crimes.
Yeah.
So now they're going to dig him up and prove a whole bunch of stuff about how he died?
Yep. So the casket is buried under a protective cap of concrete and scrap iron.
Jeez.
Then it's topped by 4 reinforced concrete slabs.
That sounds like they really didn't want to have him dug up.
Yeah, absolutely. So they're going to have a hard time getting through that.
When he and his gang, this is just unbelievable, they had exaggerated accounts of his bravado and his colorful personality. They styled him as a modern Robin Hood.
Yes.
Now, what happened was, after evading police for almost a year in four different states, he was wounded and returned to his father's home to recover. He went to Chicago in July 1934 and met his end at the hands of police and federal agents who were informed of his whereabouts by someone else. And on July 22nd of that same year, the police and the Division of Investigation closed in on the Biograph Theater where he was hiding out. Federal agents led by Mervyn Purvis. What a name.
Mervyn Purvis.
Mervyn Purvis and Samuel P. Cowley moved to arrest him as he exited the theater. He drove a Colt Model 1908 vest pocket and attempted to flee, but was killed, and it was ruled as justifiable homicide. Wow.
It was apparently a woman who betrayed him, who became known in the papers as the Lady in Red, who got him arrested. And if you're thinking about the movie they made, it was in 2009. It was Johnny Depp in the movie Public Enemies.
There we go. All right.
Yeah.
Anyway, they're going to dig him up, and they're going to look at him again.
Yes, and also just prove that he's there, because a lot of people don't believe that his body is
there. Apparently 15,000 people viewed the corpse when he was lying in Chicago, and they made death masks of him. He's buried at the Crown Hill Cemetery, and his gravestone's been replaced several times because of vandalism by people who are chipping off pieces of souvenirs. Mm. Yeah, okay. All right.
Mm. I don't know why they have to
dig him up again, but there he goes. This poor guy's never going to rest in peace.
He's been in there for 85 years.
Jesus. What a way to go. All right, we were talking about unemployment earlier, and honestly, I don't know what to make of this, but it's time that we started to hold our government to account for the fact that we've ended up in a worse situation, not a better one. Despite all their attempts and their promises and their ideas and their policies, government just cannot figure a way out of this. So it's time to face the music. South Africa's official unemployment rate jumped to 29% in the second quarter of the year, which is the highest jobless rate since the start of 2008. And I thought we'd get someone in here who actually can help us understand these numbers and also understand how we've ended up at this point. So I brought in Neo Kwao, who's he's basically come in to explain to us what's going on here. Neo, how are you?
I'm all right and you, Gav?
Yeah, well, this is not great news, huh?
No, absolutely. I mean, this is scary. You know, just not too long ago, we were saying, all right, 27.6, it's a hike. And yeah, we're freaking out. But, you know, if you look at that those digits and it jumps all the way to 29%.
Yeah.
At some point, and this is like from first quarter, now we are in this.
Well, I mean, they say that it's not even just 29%.
No, it's actually a lot higher if you take into consideration the NEET youth. So NEET, not in education, employment.
Oh, N-Y-E-T.
No, N-E-E-T. All right. So oh, NEET.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I'm just pronouncing it in Afrikaans. So NEET youth, not in employment, education, or training. So that also includes those who have just given up hope of ever finding, and it goes all the way up to 56%.
Jesus.
You know, and that is an alarming rate. And at some point, government needs to say, you know what? We don't know what to do.
Well, do they know what to do? Because they're not admitting that. They're saying, oh, no, we're going to fix. I even heard Ace Magashule yesterday in the news talking about how, no, we're going to give this urgent attention. We're going to have special committees. We're going to call Parliament together. We're going to get the executive working really hard to get unemployment down. And
you know what? Here's the problem. The problem is that when you respond to a problem in that sort of fashion, you are saying don't jump in to the people that could possibly jump in.
Like
all right,
who?
You know, people with ideas. You see, that's the thing. South Africans generally are very innovative and they're very apt at solving their own problems. You understand? Mm-hmm. But here's the problem: the biggest challenge is that we are looking at unemployment as the problem. And when you are looking at unemployment as the problem, then your psychology is fixated around the only response to this thing is to create jobs. Now, I always say that we need to relook at this whole problem and say we don't necessarily have an unemployment problem. What we have is an income problem, because now that shifts your thinking and your approach to the problem, and you start thinking outside the box and say, all right, if I'm addressing an issue of income, does it mean I have to be employed? Not necessarily.
Well, no, we were just talking about this kid who won the Fortnite game.
Exactly.
And won $3 million. Okay, but just explain to us how you're involved in this, because there's this organization called YDIDI, right?
Yeah, it's YDD.
Yeah.
And as early as 2009, while working as a software engineer for a company, NetOne Applied Technologies, ironically, NetOne at the time when I was working in that company, mm-hmm. I was part of a team that was basically in charge of maintaining and also just creating functions around a whole lot of systems. But one in particular was a system called the CPS, Cash Payment Solutions. Now, if you remember Cash Payment Solutions from NetOne, that used to be the system that was responsible for
social welfare.
Yeah, that was responsible for paying South African grants.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And why do I say the irony in that? Is that moving from a space where I made a decision that, you know what, I am tired of being part of a solution that is gunned at not getting young people off grants. I want to be part of a solution whereby, you know, we can be in a space whereby we are encouraging and empowering young people to actually look at alternative means as opposed to grants. Because what do grants do? Grants
make you dependent on them.
It's a dependency syndrome that you are perpetuating, that you're fostering.
All right, but so let's go back to your question from earlier, because I understand where you're taking this, but we need to kind of cut out some of the stuff that people might not understand in between. It does get complicated.
Yeah.
First of all, the government's very proud of social welfare. They say this is a great system. Look how many people we're helping. But essentially what they're doing is removing those people's accountability and those people's own responsibility to look after themselves. They're disempowering them. They're not empowering them, right? They think by giving them money, they're sorting out the problem. But essentially they're making these people, first of all, dependent on taxpayer money,
yeah,
which is no good because that's a drain on the economy, not a productive addition to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then your question of income versus unemployment, that income is the problem, not unemployment. They're not solving that. But how do we solve income if we can't create jobs?
You see, that's the thing, is we need to be honest, right? Global GDP has been on the decline for the last 20 years, according to leading economists. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So over and above that, productivity has also been declining on top of that. So you look at those phenomenons, it's not just something only happening in South Africa, but it is something that is happening globally. But in South Africa, it's a lot more exacerbated. You understand? So now you need to look at the economy. The economy is evolving. We have moved and greatly moving from an economy whereby it made sense to have people as permanent employees in your company.
Yeah.
You understand? And largely, a lot of companies are looking to have people come in on a contractual basis, because
like freelancers,
mm-hmm. you understand? But we have done very, very little to gear up people and gear up new graduates that are coming out in any form of educational institution to say, when you get out of here, a job is it's just probably the second or the third thing you are thinking about. When you get out of here, we want you to be in a position to can be able to create value and move to finding ways of exchanging that value for somebody who wants it.
But so old employment schemes are on the way out, and old ideas of being permanently employed but in a company are on the way out. So people want to look at new ways of doing this, like freelancing. How will that create more income? How will that create more employment?
Let's take,
because people will surely just take the money that they would have put into a permanent position and now split it between two or three people.
All right. So number one, let's just take a practical thing that I tried out. All right. Not too long ago, you know, I decided, you know, let me just create a website. Right? It wasn't really a hectic website. It was just content. You could go there, just have fun and look at stuff. Mm-hmm. Right? And I created the website within a period of about 3 days. Mm-hmm. All right? And then after that, I just put in some AdSenses from Google. Right? These are, you know, features that you can integrate into your website that then become advertising on your website, mm-hmm. right? Because you know what? Guess what? Not all of us have the sales skills to go out there and say, convince companies to advertise on our site, right? So that becomes an option. I added that and I forgot about it. Yeah. 6 months, about 8 months in, mm-hmm. I received a notification from Google and they were saying, hey, listen.
You made some money?
Here's a, you know, 6,000 rand check. Where do we put it in? And I was like,
it just happened in the background while you were
doing it. It happened in the background. So imagine I spent only 3 days creating this website.
Right.
And I forgot all about it. All right. So it was active and whoever was interested was going there. And then possibly in the background, I received a check from Google. Now, can you imagine if you were to teach each and every single young person coming out of high school, or that young person that's looking for a job, teach them something as simple as creating a website, mm-hmm. right? Now, you ask, is there a demand for it? Of course there's a demand for websites. If you go to the CIPC, how many companies are registered? And how many of those companies don't actually have websites? And how many of them would actually say, you know what? Yeah, you can create me a website.
Yeah,
you know, and you don't even pay them a cent. You understand what I'm saying?
Don't have to pay them because they'll get paid by the advertising.
They'll get paid by the advertising. If I could do it that way, right? And now if you were to roll this out on a large scale, you teach every single young person. And I'm not saying everybody will be apt doing this. There are online tools that enable you to create websites. You understand what I'm saying? So if we are looking at over 1,000 companies that are registered with the CIPC, or you broke a deal, and you say, you know what, I want access to that database. I want to be able to talk to those people and offer them services to create websites. And we get every young person doing this.
I agree with you. I mean, there's lots of ways that technology, for starters, is going to make it possible for people to enter the economy.
Yes.
In an informal way, first of all, and then later on, maybe formally.
Mm-hmm.
But there's already a lot of informal trade going on in South Africa. And we've got lots of small businesses that are trying to punch through, trying to make a difference. Because big corporates are starting to fail, they're starting to slow down, they're starting to have less impact on the macroeconomics, mm-hmm. and we know that they don't provide nearly as much employment as small businesses do.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Right. So what is government doing, and do we even need them involved in this equation? Do they play a vital role, or do they play no role at all? Because it seems exaggerated in South Africa.
You know what? I've always maintained that it's not the role of government to actually create jobs.
No, well, they can't. I mean, any job they create is a cost. It's not a...
Absolutely. So I've always said that government needs to relook its position and rethink its position and say, you know what? Our biggest responsibility is to create an enabling environment, right? Now, for government to go out there and say, we are actually going to create jobs, they are biting more than they can actually chew and swallow. Yeah.
Well, they're just lying.
You understand what I'm saying? So you need to look at some of the factors that have come up. What is one of the most significant things that happened recently that was something that was passed by government? Minimum wage.
Yeah. Right. Good or bad, in your opinion?
You understand? So in my opinion, we are seeing part of what we are seeing the consequences of minimum wage introduction. You understand? And in my case, it has been a bad move on our part.
Tell me why. Because
guess what? Gareth, just to make an example, say Neo. Mm-hmm. You know, take myself for instance, all right? I could possibly afford to give Upindile, who lives down the street from my house, 2,000 rand a month, right?
To do some job for you that you don't have time for.
To come and do some job that I don't have time for, right? And Pindile, that was helping her at least be able to do a few things. And there wasn't effect of transport because she lives down the street from my house. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying? In other instances, Pindile is staying in somebody's home. So she does not necessarily pay rent. She does not necessarily pay electricity and so forth, right? Mm-hmm. But now, Neo is a bit worried that there's this minimum wage thing. I'm breaking the law.
Yeah, because so, 2,000 is less than the minimum.
You understand?
Wage, yeah?
And now I was thinking 3.5. I can't really afford that. Mm-hmm. So can you imagine how many Neos are there and how many Pindiles are there getting affected by this situation? You understand what I'm saying?
We know this if we look at the figures that have dropped now. So there are a couple of things going on here that we also need to address. First of all, it seems that there is a net emigration of talent and skills.
Yes.
Right? So some of the smarter people and the people who have the skills and who have the ideas are taking their ideas and their skills elsewhere because this is not the most fertile ground for small businesses.
Case in point, I'll give you several young people that we work with in Waididi or that we've worked with in Waididi, you know, who have developed some of the most interesting innovations, right, that the country truly needs. I'll take Charlton, for instance, you know. Charlton has developed a way in which, you know, he harnesses electricity from radio frequencies, Wi-Fi frequencies, all right? Now, can you imagine? He has developed this mobile recharge unit or, you know, a power bank, right? That is not only driven by solar, but it's also harnessing the amount of radio frequencies that are out there.
Sounds like a pretty
and
good
this
idea.
Thing stays on charge 70%. He's actually even gone as far as building a prototype.
So what's he doing? Is he going to stay?
You understand?
Here?
And this young person is seeing endless struggle in terms of getting the kind of support that any government would say, oh my goodness, you know what, as a country, we are struggling when it comes to this kind of a problem in terms of electricity.
Yeah, sure.
This is something that we could invest in, right? And as a country, we should be thinking that now, as an economy, to develop it and make it better and stand a fighting chance of a thriving society, we need to start looking at investing and developing new IP. Mm-hmm. That will give us, that will be a game changer.
So what's he doing? Is he staying here?
You understand? And
no, is he going or is he staying? I don't understand.
What we are looking at, Charlton is receiving better offers outside of the country.
Right, so he's probably going to go.
You understand what I'm saying? So I've done, through our organization, we've done as much as we can, but we are also coming across stumbling blocks keep supporting him. You understand what I'm saying? Mm. But guess what? At some point, Charlton is going to say, you know what?
Somebody,
another country wants this. I am leaving. I'm going to sell this.
Yeah.
Now, can you imagine whatever country gets this, gets the IP, develops it further, how much of a game changer it will be? Because the three pillars...
And we will have lost that, like we've lost...
We would have lost...
Sure. Syria.
Now, can you imagine the jobs that would then come as
sure,
a result of that new technology?
But then government keep on giving lip service to this fourth industrial revolution. None of them really understand, these politicians, what it is.
You know what? There is nothing wrong in me saying, Gareth, you know what you're talking about? I have no idea.
But they never,
it would be
that.
The first start in getting the right kind of help, in getting people to actually come in and say, you know what, in South Africa, there's talent. But the first thing that we find that government does is they want to paint a picture and give us a perception that they have a solution to everything, whereas they don't. You understand? Yeah. So the minute you admit that I am struggling with this problem, then people can actually come in and actually start being able to say, here's a contribution, here's something that I've started, show us the track record, and I can give you evidence.
But isn't this also because politicians aren't really practical people at all? They
come on.
They're ideologues. They're not people who solve real problems.
Think about it. You know what I'm saying?
People solve problems,
from
by the
where
way.
I'm standing.
You look at the township economy, right?
Yes.
Everybody talks about how, oh, well, there's so many poor people, townships, it's never going to work. And meanwhile, in the townships, people are finding solutions to everyday problems, whether it's water, electricity, groceries, food, all kinds of sustainable projects. And they're doing this without government.
You know, I'll take, for example, a mother that has been or that is selling food. on the side of the road or at the taxi rank, right?
Or someone now, who will babysit someone else's children. Or,
exactly. Mm-hmm. Now, those little things that could happen just to get a person by, instead of suppressing a person in a position of ultimate poverty because, again, of that minimum wage. Mm. You understand?
And the grant.
And the grant, you understand? So can you imagine my only psychology as a person who has never been able to make money or to go out and learn the skills that I could possibly use to develop some real value? My only psychology is that, oh, I have a child, right? I'm getting this grant, right? And I'm not saying that they all think like that. But when you're stuck between a rock and a hard place, and that's the only way you've ever been able to receive an income,
you're going to think, well, I must make more children.
I must make more children. Mm. You understand what I'm saying? So you are perpetuating that situation. And when it comes to 4IR, look, literally, I am saying that as a country, as a government, government needs to say, all right, what are the things that we've missed out on? Did we really take full advantage of the basic things such as the internet? Did we look at what income revenue streams, skills that we can teach our young people in South Africa and start incorporating that into our training program instead of the kind of training programs that we are largely seeing? Most of the time, the training programs that we are seeing, learnerships and so forth, they are benefiting the training providers.
Right.
And they are enriching the training providers more than they are making an impact.
Yeah, and we've got so many kids who come out of school and they think if they just get a university degree, they're going to be guaranteed employment. And that's not true either.
That is not true. So, number one, first we need to change the psychology of education in terms of the people who are the young people that are going into school. Because our only notion in majority is that I get a qualification, I'm going to find a job.
Yeah.
Right?
Which is not true. We
but
know that's not true.
What is happening is we are not creating nearly enough jobs. Mm-hmm. You understand? Just in this quarter, about 450,000 new people became qualifying in terms of a working age. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, they came out of university or at school and now they're
You understand what I'm saying?
I think I understand.
And if you look at that, How are you going to create? Because it means that we need, over and above the deficit that we have in terms of the jobs that are not there.
Yes.
You need an additional 450,000. If we
every
are
every year.
Well, you need more than 450,000 every year.
Yeah.
You know, to be a bit more precise. But if you are failing to even create 100,000 jobs in a single year.
No, well, not just failed to create any. We've actually lost jobs over the last year.
Now, it is the scariest thing that we have seen. You understand? So I'm like, really, what are some of the basic things that we need to start doing? And government needs to start saying, look, one of the things is we need to start looking at how are we doing things today. Cite a simple example. Why are we, is our government still paying proprietary license fees and using Microsoft Office? You understand? And I've got nothing against Microsoft Office, but I'm just bringing it in to say, you know what? You need to start looking at places where you can start saving money. You've got software that is open, that you can use, such as Open Office, right? And you can put that in your departments and start using that kind of software. But start looking at ways in which you can start minimizing on the cost so that you can actually have that money you need.
But our government is useless at saving money and they're very good at wasting it.
Look,
I mean, this is part of the problem too. Is
you know, they're
not only insulting young people by giving them lip service about employment. Are we going to create jobs? But then they also don't seem to be able to make government efficient enough. These really are the very worst people to run an economy.
Look, at the end of the day, what has to happen is government needs to get to a position where it admits that, you know what, we need help.
And then get out of the way.
Get out of the way. Mm-hmm. Remove things such as regulations. You know, look, I get the intentions behind minimum wage. I get the intention, but results and impact are far more important than your good intentions.
And if you keep chasing an ideology that's not working, you just end up harming yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah. You understand what I'm saying? So government, please stick to what you are meant to do, which is create an enabling environment. Make sure that there isn't red tape and regulations that keep standing in the way for any young person, for anybody to come into the space and compete and actually create opportunities and create value to be able to take it, you know, our country to the next, position that we need to be in. You understand?
Yeah.
So the next point is, can you open up doors? Open up doors to a lot more people that have done it before, that have evidence of being able to create value, being able to create jobs. And you know what? Open up positions, a stream for submissions of ideas. Do not look at where the idea is coming from. You know, the biggest problem also that we are having is if you are worried about which political party or this person is affiliated with such and such a party or such and such an association that I do not like.
Right, I agree with you completely.
That I do not like, that,
stupid,
you know,
right?
At the end of the day, you're going to miss out on great opportunities that could really benefit the majority of the country. We need to create a situation wherein you do not look at affiliation.
Mm-hmm.
But you look at that solution and the idea that is being put forward, and you merely take in ideas and suggestions
from your own party and your own team.
You understand what I'm saying?
You're missing out on the world.
You're missing out on the entire world. We need to cut that bullshit.
Yeah,
can I say that?
Yes, you say bullshit, sure.
Okay. We need to cut out that bullshit and actually say, you know what? Right now, more important than organizations and affiliations and so forth, the most important thing, it's the citizens of the country.
I totally agree. All right. Neo, thank you for coming to see us. Your organization's called YDD, right?
Yeah, Youth Development Through Investigation and Dissemination of Information. It's a mouthful.
YDD.co.za. You can find out more. Their mission is to empower the young people in South Africa through the distribution of relevant business and career info. I mean, people don't have this info. And they can put it out there and let people know what's really going on. Engineer opportunities for the next generation. I think that that's a very laudable and commendable task. And I hope that you have great success in it. Keep up the good work. Leanne Moll, thank you very much.
Okie dokie, Bob.
We're out of time.
This is CliffCentral.com.